Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today the music might get kind of heavy, but the discussion is not really so heavy. We're talking with Sean Licklider, who is the bar director of Republic here in Los Angeles, as well as several other places. You can hear him chat about all of that. And we're going to talk about his starting out at a country club in Tennessee, finding his way here to Los Angeles, and all of his rock and roll days in between. Yes, he was in a band that toured the country opening for some names you know. You might even know his band. We're going to play a song by them at the end. And actually, right now, we are playing music from his current project, Inverta, which is an instrumental project. So if you're liking it, you might want to look that up, Inverta. And let's get down to business and talk with Sean about rock and roll and drinking, but in a classy way. Tell people who you are and where you work and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so my name is Sean Licklider. I'm the bar director at Republic, Petty Cash, Sorry Store, Wildflower, and the soon-to-be-open BC Clet.
Oh my God, where's that one going to open up?
It's the old Soto and Pico space that was on Pico and Pico and Beverly.
Yeah, that little area is really. Yeah, that little area has really been everything down there on Pico. I really like what's been happening down there. I have a friend that moved there a few years ago, and she's very pleased from buying a house down in that neighborhood now.
So yeah.
I was just saying that your whole life does seem to be music and booze. So I'm super appreciative that you're here on this call because you're kind of like the ideal guest for this podcast. Because I actually worked in, I've always been in music, but only really came into more of the booze thing probably like, I don't know, 2000s or so. And I don't make music. I appreciate those who do. And you've made music. So I kind of want to start there. When did you first start playing music?
Oh my God. Before I started like actually writing my own stuff, like when I was a kid, my mom made me take piano when I was in kindergarten. And I, you know, I fucked around for like a little bit with it.
You can totally swear on this podcast.
I didn't really, it didn't really stick. So I think whenever I got to like middle school or in that realm, I wanted to play any instrument. So I was doing like school band stuff. So I played trumpet, clarinet, saxophone, baritone.
Wow.
And I just did that over the span of like 3 years and I think it's more or less, I just wanted to see how things worked. And then when I got into high school, I started playing guitar. Okay. And that became my focus. So, mm-hmm. So I think I first started, my first band was when I was 16 or 17.
Yeah.
And I stayed like with different reiterations of that group for a number of years until probably, I think like 7, 8 years.
Really?
So, good while with the same group, but we kept, you know, I kept changing like different forms and things like that. And then it evolved from, I got a guitar position with a really cool band that I was super happy to be a part of and got to tour and do a lot of cool stuff.
Do the whole thing. Yeah. Would that be Copper that you're referring
to? Yeah.
So I saw, of course, you know, I saw your little bio and it said the band Copper and your band. When did that band start and what was the lifespan of Copper?
Well, for me, it was fairly short. Mm-hmm. It was, they started in 2000 and then we were completely out of it by 2006.
Okay, because I started working in radio in 91 and ended around 2001. And listening to it, I'm like, oh, I'm sure this made its way through our library because, you know, right away it struck me as those sort of, I want to say like post-grunge, the more melodic stuff like Failure, you know?
Yeah. I love Failure.
Yeah, right? Failure. Oh, I love them so much. But yeah, you know, it was sort of like in that, the melodic but noisy kind of stuff that was happening at that time.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were trying to be, I guess, more of, it was really funny because the labels would, they couldn't really peg what we were supposed to sound like. Mm-hmm. It's like, they wanted us to be like Maroon 5, nothing close to that.
And then they're like,
we want you to be like Nickelback and those kind of
bands.
Yeah, exactly. So they're like, you're kind of in the middle of what that genre is. And we're like, I hate both those bands.
Do you have any good tour stories from that time?
Yeah.
He's already laughing. So you're like, which one can I say and not get in trouble for telling?
Yeah. I mean, how PC can I keep it here?
You know how to keep it PC.
You know what? Well, this one's pretty tame, but...
You know, well, we don't want tame, dude.
One of the really great experiences we had was going out with Jimmy's Chicken Shack.
Oh, wow.
who were absolutely fantastic. Like, they were so nice to us. Not every band's nice. Like, I'll tell you one that's not after that. they kind of like took us under their wing. We kind of like learned the ropes on the first part of a tour with them. Mm-hmm. And we weren't sure how like the hazing and things like that would go. And like, we've heard about that. And it's like, they totally hazed us on like our second to last show.
Yeah.
I guess it was our last show. It's our last show. They came on stage on our last song and they duct taped us to our instruments.
Well, were you performing and they just came out and just wrapped
you?
Yeah,
so you can't stop playing and they just came out and just wrapped us up really quick. And then they took, in fact, they took the microphone and like duct taped it to our singer where he couldn't, he's like turning his head trying to sing. took our drummers, took all his drums away and just left him with like a hi-hat and a snare and that's it. So, and in turn, they liked the party pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And we were in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And Hilton Head at the time, they only served mini bottles of liquor.
Yeah.
So that was like the law in South Carolina. It's like, so if you wanted like a Jack and Coke, they gave you a mini bottle of Jack
and then a glass of Coke. Mm-hmm.
So we just took turns after every single song they played going up on stage and just handing them
drinks.
And mind you, they were drinking like a whole bottle of tequila before they got on stage in the first place.
Oh.
And they got so shit-faced. Jimmy got so shit-faced, he stopped playing altogether. And he went on this rant about George Bush in South Carolina. And everybody's diehard, you know.
Yeah, right.
And he just started saying, like, fuck George Bush.
You know, this was W, right? Not the elder.
Yeah.
This is the 2000s.
Yeah, this is 2004.
Yeah.
About that time. So, and like he would get so pissed off and he'd have the microphone in his hand and he would just slam the mic down and it would make this like god awful
like twang.
Yeah. And I mean it got so bad that his band just like walked off stage.
Oh,
people
no.
were like booing.
I was about to ask, how did the audience like
yeah,
all this?
Because
sometimes
well.
That can be fun, but
yeah, it didn't go over well. And thankfully, those guys are like they're super cool, and they're like the next day, like, yeah, you got us pretty good.
Do you miss that life? Do you miss the band?
I
kind of
do. I really like performing live.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm super fortunate. I got to see a lot of part of the country that a lot of people don't. And it's like I've been to a shitload of cities.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, oh yeah, where are you from? And be like, oh, I'm from, you know, Connecticut.
Cincinnati.
And be like, oh yeah, and start talking about music venues. And I'm like, I've been there. And they're like, oh, where did you go? And I'm like, nowhere.
Yep.
Just
yep.
the music venue. And that's
yep.
it.
I have a friend who he's a lifelong musician, makes his
yeah.
living that way. And he has always said, you never pay, when you pay for the ticket, you're never paying for the show. You're paying for the 22 hours around the show that we
yeah.
like have, that we're on the road or we're getting
yeah.
unloading or whatever, all that stuff. And he's like,
yeah.
you never get to see the places really. You know?
I mean, I was a master at like Tiger Woods golf. Like we just played beat lane the entire time. It was golf. It was like Mortal Kombat. Like,
life on the road, man.
Yeah.
But when you came out to LA, you were kind of still pursuing the music thing, right?
Yeah, so I took a job with a guy named Alex Troop,
mm-hmm.
who was part of a band called Crashland in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Super talented songwriter. I came out, auditioned with him, and they asked me to move, and I came out and wrote some songs with them, and it fizzled out. Partly because they were more like Rolling Stones, and
mm-hmm.
I love the Rolling Stones, but that wasn't really my style.
Yeah.
I was doing more like Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
So I ended up, that's how I got my, you know, initial introduction, like, oh, you're going to move to LA. And then, you know, I'd been here before, but never in that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had some friends that I had met along the way over the years that were from Memphis that were starting a band out here, and they hadn't really had a full project, and I ended up jamming around with those guys, and that became Inverta eventually. So
how it would Umberta?
Inverta.
Inverta. I thought you said Umberta.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, I haven't
yeah.
heard that one. Inverta. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. It's my accent.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got the SoCal accent, so we all got something, right?
Yeah.
California girl and you're a Tennessee boy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But very slightly so. I really am not hearing it. So you've obviously been in California for too long already.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
But you've worked in hospitality pretty much your whole life as well, right? I mean,
yeah, so I started in restaurants when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
Washing dishes, did most of the parts in the kitchen, and then started moving my way through front of house. And then when I got into like early college life and was really big into music,
yeah,
I started bartending because it was something I could do.
You could come back, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I could go on tour and then come back and bartend. So I just kind of, you know, spilled over from there. And I was pretty fortunate along the way with bartending that my first real bartending job in Knoxville was at a old country club.
Ooh.
So, and I mean, hindsight, I was like, this job is bullshit. You know, I'm like, it's awful. I hate working with all these old people. And I didn't realize that they had all this really rad booze.
Yeah.
In
right.
cabinet. I was making,
you're probably learning
classic
classics,
cocktails.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So I learned classics in like the late 90s that most people weren't a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you have like a 7-year-old man asking for an old granddad Manhattan, I was like, oh, okay. You know, it was cool.
I was gonna say it seems like your palate probably was already like predisposed just from having that be your starting point.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, most kids are like drinking their bad Bacardi 151 in high school or Jose Cuervo in high school.
And yeah,
you started off with something
I was a whiskey kid.
Well,
all
yeah,
the way.
Tennessee.
Yeah, had to be.
See again, SoCal, so tequila. You know.
Yeah.
So what kind of, how long did you stay at that country club before you kind of started moving out? Or did your bar jobs always depend on your band jobs?
Yeah, basically. So they were actually really cool. I could always leave and come back there anytime I wanted until, you know, the band life really kicked in and my hair was really long and they're like, yeah, you can't do that. You can't go beers at the country clubs. I ended up venturing out to some local bars, like college bars.
Yeah.
So I've done just about everything. I've done club bartending. I've done sports bar. I've done your frat bars.
Yeah.
And then my final stint before I moved was at a martini bar or jazz club. So, which I got, it's kind of like a meld of everything that I've already
done. Yeah.
I'd already put together. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
So when you came out here, you know, I'm guessing the same thing kind of happened when you came out to LA. You were doing the band thing and then picking up the bar gigs to kind of supplement the band.
Could not find a job to save my life when I first got here.
Do you mean a day job or a bar job?
A bar job.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I got this so many places and a lot of them are gone now, which is great. they wouldn't hire me because... They wouldn't hire me because they said I didn't have big city bartending.
Shut up! Are you kidding? Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sorry, that's crappy.
And then I still had my hair was really long at the time still. Mm-hmm. So that I think that played a part of the problem.
What year was it that you moved here? I mean, Los Angeles is full of long-haired musicians. How is that an issue?
It's kind of crazy. I actually ended up doing catering for Total Success Catering in Hermosa Beach.
Oh, wow.
And got thrown all over the city to do that. And then that got springboarded into the Jonathan Club in Santa Monica. So I actually became the private events manager at a country club, which is kind of funny to think that I was starting back at the same spot. Trying to figure out that, but thankfully through that job, the club manager had worked for Thomas Keller Restaurant Group up in Napa, and that got me into Bouchon.
Wow!
So he had the club that at the time was going through some renovations, and he was like, "You're probably going to need some side work if you want to look into this restaurant." So. I had no idea who Thomas Keller was. So I was like, yeah, cool. And so I'm like trying to get as much information as possible. And then I've never worked in a chef-driven restaurant at the time. And I got there. And thankfully, I knew the assistant general manager because I had a small stint at Boa Steakhouse where I was bartending there. And the guy that was the GM was the AGM at Bouchon. So I got the job. And it's like, it was barely any interview. And I remember the wine director, he was like, well, I guess you should make us some cocktails. And I ended up making him a Manhattan variation, which I called it a variation, which I didn't realize what it really was. I basically made a Manhattan with a bar spoon of maraschino.
Okay.
Liqueur. So
there you go.
And he was like, this is fantastic. And I was like, oh, just created something new, and then didn't realize it's common. So I did that, and then I made him like
it was new to them. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Right. I did like a brandy stinger with an absinthe rinse, and he had never seen anything like that. And that's all based on working at the country
club. At that first country club, I was gonna say. Of absorbed a lot of these old school recipes, even without knowing what they were exactly. It was just these old guys asking for things a certain way, right?
Exactly. And that's kind of my bartending style anyways. It's all classics and using that template to create something original. Mm-hmm. So
when did you feel like you were really like starting to find your own, you know, it must have been during this time that you were like, okay, let's experiment. What can I do, you know, to create my own?
It was, during that time. Yeah. When I first started Bouchon, it was, I was a daytime bartender. And I think it took like 6 months they made me the head bartender.
Yeah.
And then that grew to, you know, creating the cocktail menu for there, which got sent over to Las Vegas. Part of it got sent up to Napa. Mm-hmm. So, which was fun. I was really diving in on what spirits you should use for particular cocktails. So you make a martini, you make a martini with Plymouth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But then I started experimenting around that daytime when I had those shifts. We had like a blackboard that we would constantly change. So I would come in every day and start with whatever produce they would have, just try to figure out how can I make this into a cocktail.
Nice.
And then, which is exactly what I do at Republique. So, so that's basically, I was self-taught.
Yeah.
Self-taught on just trying to figure it out.
That's wild. So did you?
I never really had a mentor.
Yeah. It seems to have worked out.
Yeah.
It's did you have any particular spirit that you fell in love with? You know, obviously you knew about good spirits pretty early on, which a lot of people mm-hmm. don't have the opportunity when they're bartending careers anyway to do it first. So did you fall in love with something during this time? Did you find yourself leaning towards your gin person? This goes so well with all
I think
Thomas Keller does that farm table stuff so well. Mm-hmm. You know, beautifully. I would think that garden fresh feeling.
Yeah, for cocktails, it was definitely gin. Mm-hmm. Whiskey and gin were huge. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like mezcal was still fairly, you know, no man's land. It still kind of is. You have to. I think we had like a Del Maguey, the Iberico mm-hmm. mezcal in the back bar at Bouchon that was given to him by Jose Andreas. Mm. And I remember tasting that and being like, oh, wow, this is awesome. And we also had a bottle of Sombra, which I was like, wow, this sucks. So that was my introduction.
And then there you go.
What mezcal was. I was like, wow, it could be really good or it could be really awful. And it's like whiskey can be, you know, really good and it could be just okay. It's usually not awful. Mm-hmm. Like you spit it out. not to crack on Selmer if anybody out there is like likes to use that. It's fine for cocktails. I guess I would have to say it was whiskey and gin there, and then brandy started rearing its head at me. So brandy is my new affection. So
did you ever have the opportunity to kind of merge your music and your booze, like behind the bar? Since you've been so immersed in both for so long, did you ever have that opportunity mm-hmm. to like create your music cocktails, you know, as it were? Or is that never really quite fit in where you've been?
I ran a series at Bouchon. I don't even think they knew I was doing this. I actually, Rob Harpus, who was the wine director at the time, he definitely knows I was doing this. I'm a huge Spaghetti Western fan.
Oh, really?
So okay. I have a tattoo of the man with no name on my arm.
Nice.
So I started doing cocktails based on characters from those movies. So like Angel Eyes, Pale Rider, you know. Blondie. It's like Tuco and all these different, that kind of stuff. But as far as like musicality part, I never really bridged that gap of you know, creating things based on that. I have actually, it's happening more now than it was back then.
And so, why is it happening more now? Just because you're doing the to go?
Doing the Baron Stone stuff. It's like, that's getting to play in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you caught up on any of that.
Mm-mm, no.
Okay. So, one of my bartenders at Republique, Vesu, super talented bartender. Mm-hmm. He's got, a catering company called Baron Stone, and we started this these cocktails to go for to help other bartenders in need.
Yes.
So and Max Reese is a part
Stone,
of that.
Right? Clerk. It's Bear
yeah.
and Stone. Okay. Yeah. I
Bear
have
Stone,
heard of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Claire Ward was a part
yes,
of it.
Yes. I know Claire.
And then we would
very
do these
well.
Themes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. We did these themes based on like would be like summer jams.
Yeah.
And then we would all pick our song that we'd be like, oh, this is my summer jam.
Did you have a summer jam?
But we did. Oh, I can't remember. I can't remember what I picked.
Oh my God! Come on.
I'm pretty sure it was Hall and Oates.
What is a Hall and Oates drink? Was it whiskey?
I think I did. No. Yeah, it's definitely whiskey. Max and I usually got stuck with the tequila cocktails since that's more of our forte too. Uh-huh. So it's more or less like naming the cocktail and then, you know, trying to create something around it.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
So, I can't remember some of the other ones we did. We did, Claire had a really good one. She had, for like COVID songs, what'd you do for that? And she had Baby It's COVID Outside. It's like the Christmas song.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's super clever. I'm not that smart.
Well, you know, I've noticed, and maybe you can relate to this a little bit, kind of the synergy behind the bar. And synergy, I feel like such an asshole for even saying that word. But, you know, it's like that camaraderie. That's actually what I want. Just being behind the bar. And right now is a weird time because you might be behind the bar yourself because everything is like to go. Or I don't know if you guys are doing outdoor dining right now, right? Are you able to?
Yeah.
So maybe you have two people back there, not really quite sure, but a lot of times when you're behind the bar, there has to be this sort of compatibility that works behind the bar that I've talked to other musicians who relate it to a band. They're like, yeah, there's definitely something there. You have to kind of learn each other's strengths so you can kind of flow back and forth back there.
For sure.
And run through. So, I mean, what kind of, I'm just trying to, there's that link between the creativity of a band, creativity and camaraderie of a band to a group behind the bar. You know, how has that worked out for you? Does that seem like something that has, I mean, since you've worked in both for so long, it seems like a natural fit almost.
Yeah. it's been interesting because not everybody wants to create. Mm-hmm. So, and it's kind of the same thing with a lot of bands. Like you have generally like, you know, one to two songwriters. Mm-hmm. That kind of, you have somebody that's either doing vocal harmonies and everything else, melodies, and then you have somebody that's doing the music part. And then you have sometimes where it's one person doing both, which was kind of like Copper was. Like, we all contributed, but Keith was the star of the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's doing fantastic. That guy is blowing up still.
What's he in now?
He's the guitar player from Breaking Benjamin.
Oh, wow. And, okay, so he's kept busy.
Yeah, and he is he's just putting out a new solo
wow
record.
So behind the bar then
the guys
oh sorry behind the bar then you're saying that people same kind of thing, not everyone wants to create behind the bar either.
Yeah, not everybody wants to do that, and it's like I've been the one that kind of steers the ship, so I've been the songwriter behind the bar.
So you've maintained your songwriter role basically most of your life.
but it's still the same thing, and I think that we all do this. It's like, I don't want to put out something that's garbage. I want people to like it. Mm-hmm. So I make sure that the team is involved with every aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I want feedback. Even though I think it's a banger, I'm like, try this and tell me what you really think. And 9 times out of 10, everybody will give you some kind of constructive criticism. They're never going to be like, oh, that's perfect. Because everybody does want to wants to put their mark on it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. It has to be malleable, and it's how I grow too. So I adapt from and learn from all the bar teams that I've been a part of. And they all bring something different to the table. And I will say this, I've actually never had to fire. I fired. I usually think I'm pretty good at hiring and
yeah, but you've been
a
in the biz for a long time. Sometimes people, their heart's not in it anymore or something, you know? Kind of like being in a band.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the love fades.
yep, it does. It does, for sure.
So when you are chilling out, when you're at home or when you're not working, well, you're working a lot, I know, because you're overseeing many different bar programs, but in your rare downtime, what is your what are you listening to and what do you have sipping on when you're chilling out?
We'll talk about booze first. I am obsessed with Jackie Nabari's the V Reserve cognac.
Oh, I haven't had that. You were just saying that brandy and cognac are your songs now.
It's the benchmark. It's the benchmark for all cognacs to me.
Okay. I'm glad we're recording this because that's something I need to note for myself. Because I have like one cognac in my bar, you know, like my home bar. And I'm always like, it's the Pure Fran. This is good for everything. It'll work, you know.
Right, yeah.
But cognac and brandies have been coming up lately in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So you are yet another.
I'm a huge eau de vie guy. So Armagnac too, like anything from Licantata, like all their stuff is fantastic.
Okay.
Especially like you have to get the Pibu from Licantata. It's kind of like the Pappy Van Winkle of Armagnacs.
Oh, Armagnacs. Okay.
So those are great. All the camo stuff from Calvados. Those are brilliant. So I have a bottle of 18-year camo at home.
Wow.
That I sip on.
You're like, I can tell you the booze right away.
yeah. Some Rochelle that I picked up. That's really great.
Wow. Anybody
that's never had Rochelle, it's life-changing.
I've never had it. I've never had, I don't think, most of the things that you've just mentioned just now. But like I said, brandy, cognacs, armagnacs, they've not really been in my world so much. And it's something that, again, I've been hearing people talk of lately, so I'm taking notes.
And then, of course, mezcal is always going to be huge.
Yeah.
I love all the stuff. I picked up some things on my last trip to Mexico with Mazante. Mm-hmm. So I have some pechugas from Michoacan that are fantastic.
Wonderful. And what are you listening to while you're sitting?
Rattlesnake.
Oh, it's a rattlesnake one? You know, when I was talking with Max, we brought up the rattlesnake, the coyote, this sort of thing. And when the rattlesnake came up, none of those surprised me because I know it's whatever animal might happen to be passing by could wind up being the flavor of the drink.
run over a snake. You're like, oh, just put that in
there. We'll just put that in there. Yeah. And growing up, in Southern California, my family had a home in the desert. Well, my aunt lived in the desert. So we had rattlesnake. We had rattlesnake because it was trying to eat her rabbits, so she killed it and cooked it instead, you know? So I totally get that mentality. But yeah, he was talking about some of those mezcals that you guys are bringing across and everything, so.
Yeah, well, the rattlesnake represents virility in their culture, so. So they actually, he had it in the still. And then he actually suspended it into the demijohns.
Oh, wow.
With juice. So whenever he poured it, it was in the demijohn still.
Oh, my God.
So,
it's
kind of crazy.
You're very virile, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
So then what are you listening to while you're drinking your fancy stuff or your virility juice?
I'm getting old. I can tell because I keep hearing like modern radio, and it's not really for me. I always fall into classics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge Black Sabbath fan. I'm actually wearing a Black Sabbath t-shirt.
Oh, hey, yeah.
I've
got my, you can see behind me, it's all 90s back there, except for my X poster.
Nice, yeah,
I'm like, the sound of the 90s lives on my back wall right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you're back in the classics. You got your Black Sabbath. You got...
Black Sabbath. I love the Eagles. Anything from... Oh, and talking about the 90s, like, I love Deftones. Deftones is one of my all-time favorite bands.
Yeah.
That was a huge influence on me. My angsty teen.
I was going to say, one of these bands, which one was the one that made you pick up a guitar? I mean, you started with piano, but that was your mom's decision, so.
to pick up guitar is Led Zeppelin.
Oh, really?
Definitely Led Zeppelin.
Were you one of those kids trying to play Stairway to Heaven, or did you have a better song?
I absolutely was.
Yeah, okay. seems like a nice starting point. I mean, you can see I have a guitar back there, and I was eight when I got that. And the first song I tried to teach myself was Blackbird by the Beatles, because it's acoustic. It seems like it would be easy to play, you know?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So what else were you jamming to when you were a kid?
My very first exposure to, like, rock, like, in that era, my mom's youngest sister, was, I think she was, when she was, like, babysitting me, I was, like, 6 years old or something like that, so she was still in, like, her 20s, was listening to Boston, so, like, Boston Third Stage, and she had all these cassettes. That's how old I am. Cassettes everywhere.
I'm sure I'm older.
but there was one that caught me, and it was AC/DC's Back in Black.
Yeah.
That was
oh my God, I remember that was listening the one that got that. Me. I remember listening to a cassette. I went to Catholic school, right? So Back in Black was like evil for us to listen to. And I remember listening to it on a cassette player. Like, you know, the kind that had a handle on it, but it was still square and you popped it in. It wasn't boombox, it was pre-boombox. Somebody had one. We listened to that cassette, like, on the playground, way in the back, away from all the nuns, because we knew we'd get in trouble for listening to that. So I totally feel
so
you.
It's so great,
that.
Though.
Yeah. I know. That's
the same thing.
That adds to it, right?
The only way I got away with that was because the cover was black. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I really like AC/DC. My mom sees, like, one of the covers, and Angus has got, you know, devil horns.
Yeah.
She's like, you can't listen to this anymore.
Totally. I remember my brother was into the Misfits when he was like junior high. My mom called me to ask if that was okay. She didn't know if it was, well, they have face paint and blood on them and they're singing like, it's like everything's about death. And I'm like, oh, they just sing about 50s horror movies. It's fine. Yeah, don't worry about it.
I saw all the Misfits, like I saw them at the Roxy like maybe 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
And Jerry gave me his armband like after the show, and I was so stoked. I got my picture. I'm like, yes!
Yeah, right. You're like, it's full of his sweat. Yeah.
It totally is. I still have it. I'm like, I'm never going to do that.
I have a girlfriend who has a glass. She used to work at the Roxy, and Axl Rose performed there, and that was her band. She was Guns N' Roses, and the glass he was drinking from, she worked in the box office, but she would sometimes work the floor, you know, cocktails and stuff. So she was able to be in his section. She went over, took the glass, and kept it. And I remember she put this glass like in a bell jar, and it started to mold a little because there was stuff on it, but she did not care. And I was like, to each their own, man. It's totally fine.
Yeah, that's next level.
So, okay, well, we probably should wrap this up because I know we all have stuff to do. But thank you so much for talking with me. And don't go. I'm going to turn this off, but don't go. But let's tell everybody, if you want people to follow you on the social media or Republic or any of that, if there's any of that sort of info you wanted to give out, you know, the websites, or any programs that you're involved with. You'd mentioned Baron Stone. Anything like that you want to tell people about. And Baron Stone is only for LA people, right? Because it's an actual cocktail. So you have to kind of be local for that one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So my Instagram is at Sean, Shawn, Inverta, Inverta.
There you go, Inverta.
And no, it's not my last name. Everybody always asks, is that your last name?
Like it's my band. It's
my band. Yeah, well, it still is. We still actually do stuff. So,
do you have music out right now?
We are still working on some stuff. It's all instrumental. So it's instrumental based on, like, it's all progressive. It's progressive metal. So.
I was going to say, it's like you are a little bit embracing your spaghetti Western love, I think, with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can see how these things go together.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool.
So that's my Instagram, and then Republic LA is Instagram for Republic, or republicla.com. Petty Cash Taqueria, Bicyclette will be open as soon as we get to go to In Dining. Hopefully, I've heard a rumor it's coming
summertime. Hopefully, so I would at least fingers crossed. Right?
I've heard a rumor that they're going to make the next 2 or 3 weeks they're going to make an announcement.
Like probably a 25% indoor 25%, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what else? Oh, and then Baron Stone, you can find that Vesu on Instagram as well.
Very cool. Well,
and it's
congratulations
all
on,
at,
yeah,
I'm
congratulations on
sorry.
being able to be so busy during this pandemic. I mean, you're overseeing everything, but it's been a really crazy time for those of us in hospitality. I know. So the fact that you guys are opening something is miraculous. So thanks for keeping the lights on, so
Well,
he's so sorry to
I
go.
really appreciate everybody's support too. It's like I was one of the fortunate ones that worked through all of last year. So I'm very, very thankful for that.
For sure, for sure.
And I'm very thankful to Sean for taking the time to talk with me, even though we are living in sort of pandemic times. When we did this interview, as you could hear, things are just starting to open back up here in California. We've had outdoor dining, but indoor is now happening at some capacity. And the rumor is by June, this is April, we're recording this, by June, we'll be back to completely open. We'll see what that means in the months to come. But Sean is at Republique, and you can catch him at the various spots. He's working real hard on all kinds of things. So like he said, go follow him on Instagram, go follow Republique, and you can keep track of what he's up to. And he did, of course, leave us a beautiful playlist. It doesn't have a lot of songs on it, but those songs are all themed in this kind of spaghetti western thing like he was talking about. And it's awesome. It is an awesome playlist. It's totally like the 90s are back in a updated sort of, well, not even just that. I can't even say that because Pink Floyd's on there. Anyway, just go to the Moherm's Facebook page, and I'll have a link to his Spotify playlist there. But right now, I wanted to play you his band Copper, the band he was touring with and played guitar with. This is, well, jokingly referred to as the one-hit wonder track, but they had some other songs. But this was probably the most popular one, and it is Copper with a track called By Now.
much better. Yeah, yeah. Boy, you know you don't care at all, and I believe it. Believe it.
Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.